In 2016, I ended up on my back porch and shot myself in the chest, hitting my heart, and still lived through that, waking up in the hospital. This time, though, to see my family disappointed and looking at a man who wanted to live and not understanding why he wanted to die.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is nothing short of inspirational. Corporal Todd Nicely of the U.S. Marine Corps, 6 months into his second deployment, stepped on an improvised explosive device during a routine security patrol, immediately after enduring the horrific blast and suffering massive injuries. His first two thoughts were of others, getting back to his wife and not frightening the young Marines he was responsible for. Today, Todd works to help and motivate other fellow disabled veterans through their life struggles and hardships, and I am so grateful and honored to have Todd Nicely with us. Todd, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is an honor to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Richard. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to kind of share my story and help you along with your journey, which I think coincides with mine. So
I appreciate that, and we got to chat a little bit before we recorded, and what I was struck by you is, you know, you've been pretty much everywhere. You've been in Time magazine, you've been in People magazine, you've been all over the media, yet tremendously humble, and I know you feel a great responsibility to help other veterans, and that is amazing. And so we teased your story a little bit, but if you're willing, I'd like you to tell it, you know, with greater detail, because that was a pivotal moment for you that changed your life, and I could never do it justice in a short introduction.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know where to start, because I stepped on an IED on March 26, 2010, which kind of changed my life forever. Growing up, I was always the kid in school that I played sports, but I couldn't pay attention. I was kind of getting in trouble. And growing up, I was in construction for a while and just decided when the economy got bad around 2007, I was going to go do what I wanted to do and join the Marine Corps. Well, I had finally found something I was good at and I was going to make a career out of it. And then, unfortunately, that day happened. But after that, you know, I ended up in the hospital for a while and things were great. I was happy to be alive again. But things shortly turned dark after that.
Talk to us a little bit too, Todd, about the extent of your injuries.
Okay. Yeah. So when I stepped on the IED, I lost my left arm, which they call transradial, which is right above the wrist. My right arm is an elbow disarticulation. So I'm at the elbow at the right arm. I lost my left leg right above the knee and my right leg at the knee. So I'm missing both hands and legs, and, you know, life can be hard.
I read this in your bio that your first thoughts were about your wife and the Marines you're responsible to. But, you know, when somebody goes through an experience where they didn't die, probably should have died, but didn't, a lot of things go through one's head. What was on your brain as you were sitting in that hospital recovering?
The first thing when I woke up was I actually asked the question if my men were okay. I didn't know if anybody else had gotten hurt in the blast. I just know that I assumed I had only lost my legs, but come to find out I'd lost my arms too. So, but I had a choice I had to make, and it was sit here and be upset about it and cry about it and be angry, or get up and learn these prosthetics and continue on with life and move forward and do the best you can. And so I chose the latter, and that got me through a lot of therapy, a lot of hard work, and it's kind of gotten me where I am today.
A lot of people, and I love that you say that. I've often said similar things, right? When life gets you this kind of a choice, right? When something happens to us, we either can ball our fist up at the sky and blame whichever deity we choose to believe in, or we can look for silver linings, even though when it doesn't seem like there are any, and move forward positively. And you obviously chose the path of optimism, the path of courage, and the path of perseverance. Was that an immediate thing, or was there a struggle for a bit?
It's kind of ironic because before that deployment, when I stepped on the bomb, I had "Your choices change lives" put across to my back because I knew I was going to be making decisions as a squad leader that would affect my men or possibly myself. And, you know, I didn't realize how true that saying was going to become in my life as we go on. You'll start to realize. But, you know, I've always kind of been someone that doesn't really give up very easily. And so my choice was easy. It was, you know, I woke up to World War III pretty much in the hospital with my parents arguing with my wife and all that stuff. So I was pushing forward to stop all that and make everybody happy and see my progress and make myself happy at the same time. Because I was learning again how to live life. At that time, I guess you could compare me to a one-year-old learning how to open up a chapstick with a prosthetic arm. So
I know we're both close with John O'Leary, and I remember him once on my program talking about how he visited some people on death row and asked them to find positive things in their lives. And he, you know, that came to mind to me because, you know, you're describing a situation. You were a grown man and really having to learn how to relive, how to live, find things to be grateful for. Your parents are arguing with your wife, and yet you found a way to be positive in that.
It was really easy because I still had that Marine Corps mindset of I needed a mission. I was, you know, fresh out of the Marines. I was about ready to be a sergeant, and I had that mission again. It was get through therapy, get out of the hospital, keep moving. But, you know, unfortunately, after I left the hospital, that's when things got kind of dark, and there's a lot to that story as well. But, you know, I lost purpose. And so the hospital was simple because it was task-oriented, kept me in line. You know, every morning it was wake up, I knew what I had to do. It was kind of structured for me like the military.
So this is really interesting because what you shared is what a lot of veterans share. You know, their lives, for as many years as they're in, everything is structured. Everything has an order of operation, a chain of command, a time something happens. So what do you think it was specifically once you left the hospital? Was it that lack of structure where things, the wall started kind of closing in on you a little bit?
It was a little bit of both because I didn't have time to actually grieve my injury, you know, like actually realize that this was going to be the rest of my life. Because when I woke up, I just thought of it as a mission. I never really fully thought it through. And I also lost one of my best friends like 7 to 10 days into Afghanistan. And I never got to grieve that because as a squad leader, you have to keep pushing on. You don't really have an option. You have to keep mission oriented. So I found myself in my house after therapy, just lost and not as motivated as I was in the hospital. I found dark days, and it led to some serious consequences.
How dark did it get, Todd?
Pretty bad. I ended up with a divorce, and because I was drinking heavily, self-medicating, wasn't dealing with my issues. And in 2016, I ended up on my back porch and shot myself in the chest, hitting my heart, and still lived through that, waking up in the hospital. This time, though, to see my family disappointed in looking at a man who wanted to live and not understanding why he wanted to die.
So a lot of times when people get that low and try and commit suicide and then it fails, as it did for you, for many people that's kind of their existential moment where they figure out maybe there's a different path. Because you were highly motivated. You had, you know, wrapped your mind around, you know, this was kind of like a mission, right? Recovering was like a mission, but you went home and you lost purpose and you tried to die, but you didn't.
Yeah.
What happened next?
I swore to myself I would never do it again because I had to look at the grief I would have caused my family. And so I promised myself that if I ever got that low again, that I would seek help and talk to someone or do something about it. So I got up and I kind of was motivated again, you know, but trying to find, it's hard finding new things to do when you were such an adrenaline junkie before and you did all this stuff that was crazy. And so having to find new activities and new ways to entertain myself while I started college, well, you know, still not dealing with the grieving and all that, I started to slip back into my old ways. And at this time, now I have a fiance with two young children, and I was starting to hit that rock bottom again. And I was given an option to go to a program called Focus Marines, which they had been trying to get me to go for like 8 years. And I was like, I don't need that. I don't need that. I'm a Marine. I'm strong-headed. I can do this by myself. But once again, the tattoo, your choices change lives. Little did I know that just like in the Marine Corps, you can't do it by yourself.
And I want to talk about Focus Marines in depth in a minute. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because I think there's this dichotomy, right? Like you were a Marine, and Marines are the baddest of the bad, right? Like Marines are tough. Marines, you overcome whatever the obstacle is to meet your objective as a Marine. And part of the grieving process, which you've mentioned a couple of times, that you really never, at least to this point in the story, you haven't really done, many people in the military would see that as weakness.
Yeah, and that was my biggest weakness, was I was afraid to ask for help, and I didn't understand why I felt the way I did, or I didn't understand emotions anymore. I didn't really know how to regulate them. I was either one extreme or the other. And it was hurting my social life, where I was pushing my family away. And one by one, people stopped coming around, and it made it worse for me, but it was me that was doing it. So I couldn't see it myself, but that's the stubbornness of
And I imagine, you know, this extends to military types, law enforcement, like just in general, it's that mindset of not wanting to ask for help. But was it your family? Like, what was the thing that finally clicked for you to ask for that help so you could go be part of the Focus Marines program?
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
Well, as I said, I was had a fiance again at the time, and things were slowly going back downhill, pushed everybody out of my life, and I said, what do I have to lose? Because I'm not going the suicide route again. Give it a shot. You've tried every other program. You've tried multiple different ways and avenues. And I was like, just give it a shot. If it doesn't work, we'll try something else. But that first day I got there, I had my buddy on speed dial, and I told him, I was like, look, if I dial, you come get me right now because I want out of here. But there was one question I was asked that kept me in my seat. And it was, you knew what you were willing to die for, but do you know what you're willing to live for? And I really took heart in that question because I didn't know the answer to it. I had no clue. People could say, oh, well, you're willing to live for your family. Well, no, I was willing to go die for them in order for them to have the freedoms they have. So it really took me a few days, but then I landed on the answer, and that's when things started to change.
What was the answer?
Well, I can give it away, but it's yourself. You have to be willing to live for you. At least that's my answer, because if you can't live for yourself, then you can't live or help anybody else at the same time.
And once that light bulb went off, talk to us about what happened next.
Oh man, I got in really involved in what they were teaching, and I never wanted to be that guy. I was out in the public eye for a while after I had gotten injured, and I always was putting on a happy face because I had to. But like I said, I was going through some dark times at that time, but I couldn't let people know. So after I had gone through Focus, my class that I went through, like, they were all telling me how big of an inspiration I was and stuff, and I never wanted to be that guy that people looked at and went, oh, well, if he can do it, I can do it. It's like, I don't want to be that guy. But if me being around at Focus and telling my story can help another veteran move on with his life and maybe possibly save one life, then I'm doing my job. And that's where it really comes down to, is that sometimes we're handed, well, there was two questions at Focus, because Dan said, what are you going to do with the gift you're given of your tragedy? And I wanted to punch him in the face, but I actually realized the gift of my tragedy, and I'm starting to realize how to actually utilize it.
Gift of your tragedy. I love that, because it is a gift.
It's not an easy gift, but it's a gift. And if you can accept that, you can do great things with it.
So I want to spend a few minutes. I love this. Well, but before I do, because we're definitely going to get to Focus Marines Foundation. So you went through this program. What year was this that you went through it?
I went through in 2019.
So it's been 6 years.
Yeah.
Tell us what you're doing today.
Well, today I am married to that woman that was my fiance during the time. And I have a 19-year-old now, but at the time he was like 10. My stepson, which I consider my own because he's been around. My stepdaughter, which I consider my own because she was 2 and now 11. So it's like we moved on with that, but then came along my son and he's now 5. So we've added another addition to the family, and I just get out there and do what I can. Like, I was being on an inner tube on a boat just the last weekend, and I try to mow lawns with my neighbor here and there, and I work at haunted houses, and you know, I try to just go out and continue to live life the best that I can. And sometimes I find myself in that moment of going, you know, I can't do what other dads can do with their sons, but I can do other things, like be there for them and make sure that I'm supportive, and you know, just the things a child needs. He doesn't need you to throw a football around with him. If you can't do that, that's okay. You just have to find other ways to be supportive and be there.
I love that. Todd, I know you do some work with Focus Marines Foundation. We've teased it like 50,000 times during our conversation. So tell us about what this organization does and how it's different from some of the other things that are out there as a resource.
They're different because they're not government regulated. They are a 501c3. And it was started by a bunch of Vietnam vets who didn't want to see the vets coming home from this era struggle and have to go through what they went through. And so they started a program with their own language, their own facilitators who came up with a program to teach guys how to kind of demilitarize themselves and become part of civilization again. And people might hear that and go, well, why can't you integrate? It's a lot harder than you think to reintegrate back into a society that you've been gone from for so long. Like, even with your families, I came home and I was out of the inside jokes. I had missed so many different birthday parties and family events, and friends had moved on. And so it was kind of hard to find my place back in society then. But Focus Marines does it in a way where you're not stuck in an office under incandescent bulbs. It doesn't feel like therapy. It's everybody's there for a different reason, but the information given and presented, everybody takes a different way. And the reason I'm kind of being so vague about it is because if anyone's listening and does go to the program, they have to learn it for themselves. They have to actually listen to the material and understand where it fits in their life.
You know, most people don't really give thought to what it's like to transition back into society. And I never thought, the birthday parties, that was kind of self-evident, right? If you're away, you're just missing a piece of time. But inside jokes, just not knowing, you know, you just were gone, right? And these little things. And so for you, as you reintegrated into society, what were the things that were most helpful?
Well, like I said, after going through focus, I had learned the ability to express my feelings, set boundaries with my family, and I didn't expect them to come around at first because I had put them through so much. So it was a lot of patience and just showing them that I was working on who I was and who I wanted to become. And the more you use it, the easier it becomes, but it's not easy. It's not, I told a guy to get him there one time. I said, "Do you want a Ferrari?" He was like, "Yeah." I was like, "I got the keys, but you got to drive it." So it's kind of one of those programs where we give you the information, but you have to do the work or it's not going to work.
What is your kind of formal role with this group?
Well, now I'm a mentor, but I started out just going back out on Tuesdays and talking to the groups for like 3 or 4 sessions. And then finally, I decided, because I was there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday anyway. I decided, you know what? I want to become a full-blown mentor and be here all week to help explain the material to the guys if they need me and things like that. So I've been doing that since like 2000, ever since I left in 2019. They asked me to come back the next session to be a speaker. So I really haven't missed a session since 2019.
Very cool. And I know that your story, which you're sharing here and you've shared in other media outlets, you're writing a book about that. Why, you've been very open with your story and shared it in a lot of different places. Why the book now? What made you decide to do that?
Well, because I got a little push from a friend that we both know, John O'Leary. He heard my story, but there's a lot more to my story than that's what's just being told now. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of childhood things, and I mean, I could go into it forever. I've lived the life of an 80-year-old. If you've been through it, I probably have been through it as well. And I just want to get my book out there so that way other veterans, if they just aren't going to focus, can hear it, or if someone needs some inspiration for a day, and they're even if you're not military, you can probably relate because it's not all military, but it does tell the story of how I was injured and my ups and downs and my rises from the ashes. It's the story of your choices change lives, whether it's for good or bad. So we got to kind of remember that as a human population, that no matter what our choices, it's going to affect somebody some way.
Right. No, that makes sense. Well, I know the book is forthcoming, so if you're listening to this before it comes out, circle back and we'll have the link to purchase the book in the show notes for this episode. And then the last thing I wanted to do, I know that Focus Marine Foundation is a 501c3, which means like every other 501c3, they're looking for donations. How can people contribute to this great 501c3?
I do believe if you just go to their website, focusmarines.org, I think there's a donate button on it, as well as they do events around the area sometimes. And that's the best way that they do it because they try not to publicize too much because they don't want guys to think, oh, if I go to that program, then I'm going to be considered weak and things like that. So they're getting their name out there a little bit more, but most of the participants are by word of mouth from other guys that have gone through it and changed their lives. And so any little bit helps. It costs a lot to get each individual in a seat, but it's well worth it.
Fantastic. And again, if you're listening to this, we're going to have show notes to everything in this episode at drrichardschuster.com. So we got you covered. Man, I've loved this conversation, Todd. You are doing amazing things. And I'm so grateful that that bullet that hit your heart didn't do anything to you because you're still here helping mankind. As you know, I love to wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. And that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today.
Well, Dr. Richard, it kind of falls in a couple categories. So it would be never give up and always pay it forward. Do good things to people and good things in your life will happen. The more you start to focus on the good you're doing, the less that the bad will seem to be there.
I love that. Todd, tell us where people can learn more about you online.
Well, they can Google my name, Todd Nicely, or USMC Marine Todd Nicely, but there will be a web page coming up once the book starts to get published and put out there. But yeah, you just Google Todd Nicely and there's all kinds of stories on my adventures and on TikTok, you can look me up. You're going to get a laugh out of this, but my TikTok is nolimbs0311. And, you know, I just got things that I do and funny things that I do to just, you know, make people laugh. Because like John O'Leary told me, joy brings you happiness, and there's a difference between the two.
Well, I love that. I love him, and now I love you. So this is fantastic stuff. And when that book comes out, when that website's out, like I said, we're going to update the show notes. So stay tuned if you want to get that when it's out. But man, I really appreciate you for all that you're doing in the world today. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today.
Oh, no. Thank you, Dr. Richard, for having me. And I love doing these types of things because if one person hears it and it changes their life, then we've done what we need to do.
Absolutely. And I also want to thank each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to Todd's story. If you liked it, if you were inspired, if you're going to go make a donation to Focus Marines Foundation, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.